Well, good morning, everybody. This is Bob Elson, and we're set as usual for our Sunday morning show. And remember, there's a big doubleheader at Wrigley Field today. The Montreal Expos are here, and that should be a great day of baseball. Try to get out and see that double bill. Cubs are playing very exciting ball, and the Montreal club is a very dangerous club. In the meantime, the White Sox, who are in a spin at Detroit, will be playing the final game of that series, and they'll be on the road for a while. They come home next weekend to play the same Tigers at White Sox Park. So whatever you do, have a nice day. Our guest today, and I'm delighted to have him as a guest and also to see him because he's an old friend, Dick Williams, one of the outstanding managers in baseball. He and I were members of Charlie Finley's penal colony at the same time. And he's recovered from it, and I've recovered from it. And he's gone on to better things where he doesn't wait for a call from upstairs to who to pinch hit or when to change pitchers. He runs the club the way he wants to, and he's one of the outstanding managers in baseball. We have a lot of things to talk about, and he'll be with us in exactly 1 minute. Well, we're delighted to be to have as a guest Dick Williams, an old friend of mine. We've been on the beat together for a long time. And we were friends even before we joined Mr. Finley's attraction at Oakland, California. Dick, you look like you've recovered in great shape from that experience. And you had it a lot rougher than I did.
Well, I was one of the first ones to escape, so there wasn't any problem there. Now, Charlie and I hit it off well now. I see he had open-heart surgery not too long ago. He's doing well. I came out of it with a little gray hair, as you can see, Robert, but other than that, I feel fine.
Have you ever had a comparable experience in your years in baseball?
Not up to this point, no. It was entirely different.
And you're hoping it doesn't repeat.
Well, I like the part of it that we won a couple of World Series while I was there. They won one the year after I left also, and we also won a divisional title all 3 years that I managed at Oakland. But other than that, I'd say that's the only good part that came out of it. And as you know, everybody else went their separate ways eventually. Collectively, they were a tremendous ball club. They played as a unit, played well together. I think they all had one thing in common, the owner. And now, in their separate areas, some of them are finding it a little tough. I was glad to see Kenny Holtzman hook on with the Cubs because I know it'll help them down the stretch.
Yes. You know, Charlie, we kid about him, and not many people like him, but I do give him credit for putting together a great ball club, and he certainly deserves the credit for it.
He certainly does. He worked at it. He's also doing a pretty good job with a bunch of unknown names now, and that ball club is sitting in third place, not too far behind Kansas City and behind California. So this is a surprise. Wouldn't that be something if he were executive of the year again?
Well, evidently the deal for Vida Blue, where they got seven bodies over there, some of them turned out to be pretty good ball players.
Yes, they did, and then he was able to move a player or two to different areas, different ball clubs, and acquire other talent. So they put together a young ball club. The experience or lack of experience will tell on them, you know, finishing in the top rung. I think Kansas City will be ahead of them and California. But it's surprising with all the money Corbett spent on free agents, et cetera, down at Texas that they're quite a few ball games ahead of that ball club. And this has to tickle Charlie no end.
Yeah. Well, they have had, there's no doubt about it, an amazing record. You know, when you think of Montreal, you think of the Montreal Canadiens. One of the greatest hockey teams ever put together, and that is some kind of hockey country. But I was up there. We took a group to Cooperstown last year when Ernie Banks was admitted to the Hall of Fame. And then we went to Montreal to see a game. I visited you there, remember, at the stadium. And I was really impressed with, of course, I'm impressed with the city of Montreal. It's a beautiful, beautiful city. But the way baseball is caught on it, it is not their national game. Hockey is, right?
It always has been. Hockey has been their national game. Then they have their own CFL, or Canadian Football League, which they have different rules than we do in American football. And that's a big, big thing up in Montreal. They won the Grey Cup last year. But now more and more youngsters are getting involved in baseball, and we're putting on summer clinics and summer leagues where they've had this ever since a kid was old enough to walk. They used to throw a pair of skates on them, and it was all hockey. But the ball club there was a good AAA ball club there, Bob, as you know, for many years. Jackie Robinson, Campanella, Erskine, Newcomb from the Dodger organization, Duke Snyder, they all came out of there. And so there was interest in baseball. This is something else. I played in that old Royals Park, Delarmne Stadium, and I played at Jerry Park, or I coached at Jerry Park, and now at Olympic Stadium. So I've been in all three ballparks they've had up in Montreal. And if I survive through 1980, there'll be four decades that I've been in Canada. So maybe I should apply for citizenship or something.
Well, you must feel right at home. Dick, knowing your dedication and your love for baseball and something we share, it is the greatest game in the world. I know you give it a lot of thought all at meals and at night, and you're thinking about changes in the game and things like that. Are there any changes that you would like to see in baseball itself?
Well, as far as more control over the player by owners, now since the reserve clause has gone down the drain, the whole pendulum has switched, and the players have the upper hand now with Marvin Miller and his group. It's hard to reprimand a ball player, not that you want to or you're going out of your way to look for it, but the game is played a lot looser than it used to be played, and management does not have that much of a hand in controlling it. For example, if a player continually makes a mistake and you want to get a point across to him so he won't make it anymore, the best way to do it is go to his wallet. There are restrictions on how you go about that. In fact, a warning has to be given first. And then there's a maximum amount of fine you could put on a player, and then he has the right of a grievance report. So there's so much red tape put into reprimanding a ball player if he's not playing for the ball club and just playing as an individual. And this takes a lot away from the game. I think there should be more restrictions put on a player, and it's a little tough to manage a fellow that's making maybe $1.5 million over 3 years or something like that. He'd say, well, just go jump in a lake. I can do my thing. They'd get rid of you before they'd get rid of me.
Now, they talk about the player and baseball's agreement coming up for renegotiation. When is that, a year from now?
It's we have all of next year, and it's prior to the 80 season. But both sides have been in preparation to go into long, hard litigation.
Well, I understand from the underground that fellows like Gussie Bush, Calvin Griffith, many others are determined that there's some phases of this arrangement that have to be changed. I mean, they're really adamant about it.
I certainly hope so, and I hope they stick by their guns and come up with something that is okay for both sides, not a one-way street. But if you'll remember, Bob, in all your years in baseball, you know it was a one-way street for the owners for many, many years.
It was.
And now the thing is turned around where it's basically a one-way street for the players and the Players Association and the agents and what have you. And the owners are getting burned a little now, so there has to be a compromise. When that'll take place, I don't know. But with this new contract coming up with the Players Association in 1980, there's a lot of lobbying going on right now, and something should be done about it.
When you're negotiating with a ball player, do you have to talk to his agent? Can you refuse to see his agent?
I imagine you can refuse, but then this gentleman, if he has that much talent and he has an agent, will probably be playing elsewhere because he'll play out his option and go. Yes, I would have to say you have to talk to him.
You remember the days of Colonel Rupert and Barrow with the New York Yankees.
Yeah, well, that was a little before my time, Robert, but
well, they were a couple of outstanding baseball men and outstanding businessmen. They tell a story about a fellow that wanted to see Colonel Rupert in Joe DiMaggio's days. So he was admitted, and the colonel said, well, what do you want to see me about? He said, I want to talk to you about Joe DiMaggio's contract. And Colonel Rupert, I suppose, said to him, well, can't he talk for himself anymore? Well, he said, well, I'm his agent, and I'm handling his business matters. And Colonel Rupert said to him, well, when you can play center field like DiMaggio can, you come back and I'll talk.
Well, that's absolutely right. And that used to be all the way up through, I would say, around 1970,
yeah.
When the agents first started coming into being. I can remember Kenny Harrelson, when I had the Boston Ball Club, there's another one of Finley's men. Finley fired him, and we acquired him. And I think he was given a $75,000 bonus to join our club.
He was here about a month ago.
Kenny's a good man. Yeah. And he's doing color on TV for him now, I believe. Well, Kenny had an agent. When we moved Ken over to Cleveland, he refused to report. And, in fact, his agent and he went down to see Marvin Miller's group and also the commissioner's group and finally came to an agreement. But that's one of the first players I became associated with that actually had an agent.
Tell us how you felt about the Pete Rose story. He hit safely in 44 games. Were you hoping he'd break Joe's record?
Yes, I certainly was. Now I'm a little upset with the statement he did make at the tail end, like Garber should have given in to him or given him a decent pitch to hit.
I was surprised as making a statement like that.
And that doesn't sound like Pete, but he was quoted by a number of reporters, and it's disappointing. It taints the whole glorified picture that he presented, because he had to bring in 250,000 additional fans in the different cities once that streak reached about 30. And I know he packed an additional 10,000 at least every day up at Olympic Stadium in Montreal, and look what he did down in Atlanta those following 2 days. But I wish he hadn't said that, because if you go out there and don't try to get a hitter out, or if you play too deep and let them bunt on you, that's not kosher. That the integrity of the game is at stake there. And he said Garber looked like he was in the ninth game of the world, or the ninth inning of a game in the World Series. Well, Garber made a statement, looked like he was in the final game and the final out of the World Series. Sure, I was trying to get him out. I can't give in to him, and I was really disappointed in what Pete said.
Well, I think he regrets it too, and I think it was one of those things, and probably nervous and upset, and everybody interviewing him, and I think he said something he really didn't mean it that way.
Knowing Pete, I'm sure he did, and you'll have to remember, day in and day out, a streak like that, and I don't think it'll, I still don't think anybody will get DiMaggio's streak if he didn't this time. But I've got to believe that there was a lot of pressure on him, even though he doesn't wilt under pressure, and to go 44 games, that's quite an accomplishment. But it had a build up, and I know he wishes he hadn't said it.
You know that DiMaggio did not bunt once for a hit in that streak, and he bunted 8 or 9 times.
Yes, he did. Well, Pete's not the fastest in the world. But he's got a good control of a bat. DiMaggio was a power hitter.
Let me ask you this, and I've asked somebody else this. I broadcast big league baseball for 40 years, you know, and I saw you as a player and saw you as a manager, and you saw thousands of ball players, and I saw thousands of ball players. Why is it in all that time we've only seen one Pete Rose?
Well, I think we've seen Pete Rose's in other eras. I know one thing. If I had to take one player to build a ball club around, and he doesn't run fast, he doesn't throw well, and he's older, but I'd like to have 25 Pete Roses. He just plays it so hard, and this is what you want. You want a ball player to give it the best he has that day and go all out. He's only out there 2.5 hours of actual playing time. And he plays hard. I wish all ball players played hard. But if you want to get down, it was in another era. I thought this fellow played just as hard, and I watched him for a number of years with Jackie Robinson.
Jackie Robinson, and I'll tell you another one that you'll agree on, Country Slaughter.
Oh, without a doubt. There's no question about it. And Cobb must have been the same way.
Well, Cobb was before my time. Don't look at me.
Well, you're talking about Rupert.
I was around in Abner Doubleday's time. That isn't true. But I thought Country Slaughter was one of the most exciting. I broadcast that World Series against Boston. Country Slaughter was with the Cardinals. Remember that?
1948, yes. He scored from first on a single that Pesky held the ball. Yeah.
And Pesky couldn't get the ball out of his glove, and here's Slaughter racing for the plate.
Who hit the ball?
I don't remember.
Harry Walker. Harry Walker.
Oh, that was a great play. Our guest today, and we're delighted to have him, is one of the outstanding managers in baseball, Dick Williams of the Montreal Expos. There's a big doubleheader at Wrigley Field today. Don't miss it. We'll be back with our guest in just a moment. Our guest is Dick Williams, who is a manager of the Montreal Expos. Montreal, as you know, has certainly become very baseball-minded. They have a beautiful stadium. My only impression of the stadium, Dick, was that it seems very large.
Have you been underneath the stands? You can get lost under there. We just brought a kid up who's pitching the second game today, Scott Sanderson. He's a Chicago area boy. He brought him up from Denver. He was our number three draft choice a year ago this last June. It took him 20 minutes once he got in the park to find out where our clubhouse was the other day. It's difficult if you don't know your way around there. And it's a gorgeous place, and if they ever finish it, it'll be nice. They still have to dome it.
A mutual friend of ours, Frank Lane, who is a super scout for California, maintains that Louis Tiant's delivery is illegal. He refers to the fact that Satchel Paige, who you know as I did, and Satchel Paige, unfortunately, came to the big leagues too late in his career. He would have been great. He was great anyway. But you remember that hesitation as he moved his arm? Lane maintains that Tiant is doing something illegal. He talked to one of the umpires about it, and the umpire said, well, he's been doing what he's been doing as long as he's been in the big leagues. And Lane says, well, if a guy robs a bank, you know.
I agree with you, but what the umpire is saying is this goes back to maybe when they outlawed the spitball, but there were a few guys still throwing it so they could finish their careers out throwing it, but no new pitchers, and this cost Frank Schellenbach, a career in the major leagues, because he was just coming up then and he wasn't allowed to throw it. But Burley Grimes, who was still pitching, he could finish out his career throwing it. Well, that same thing applies. Since what Tiant's been doing all these years may not be legal, but he can still do it because he's been around a long time.
When you played the Dodgers, you put Scotland Yard on Sutton?
Well, I acquired a number of baseballs long before Doug Harvey, the umpire, called a halt to him and kicked him out of the ballgame. We faced them in a series up in Montreal, Sutton one day and Tommy John the next. And I had a good dozen baseballs on my desk that had the identical mark on them. Now, it took a lot of guts for an umpire to put a stop to it. If a guy can get away with it, he's going to try to get away with it. But I think they're going to watch him like a hawk. In fact, we've had Fred Flagg, who's the umpire crew man. He's in charge of the umpires. He came by and he wanted to question a few of our players on certain things. I think all this is because of what happened to Sutton. But I do know this. If any other player is caught doctoring a baseball, the worst he can get is a slap in the wrist, because that's what happened to Sutton, and they can't put the blocks to him.
Dick, I can't conceive that a pitcher could do that with his fingernail.
Oh, I can't conceive that either. There are so many different ways to do it.
Looks like he'd need a razor blade. I saw one of those balls.
Yes. There are a lot of different things you can hide on your person that can be disposed of easily, or maybe your catcher can be doing it for you. He might have something. They don't inspect him. Or, say, an infielder. It's very simple. So the best thing to do is try not to mark it identically each time you do it. There's a certain place on the ball that Sutton would mark it. And I have baseballs to prove it. Tommy John the same way. It looked like a Xerox copy of something.
You know, I asked Tommy John like that, and he had an expression on his face like an altar boy.
Well, Preacher Rowe never said anything until he was out of baseball. And then he thoroughly or readily admitted it. But I've got to believe that they should legalize the pitch. I really do. There'll be a lot of guys trying to throw it then that don't know how to throw it, and there'll be a lot of balls going up on the roof.
Dick, would you like to see the National League have the designated hitter rule?
Well, I'll tell you, if I had a good designated hitter, I wouldn't mind using the rule at all. But I think both leagues should be uniform. I really do. And with the DH, especially the American League coming into a World Series on the odd year when they don't allow it, it has to be a little difficult for them. We survived it at Oakland because we had some good hitting pitchers. But I think both leagues should have the standard rules. But if the American League decides to do something, the National League is going to disagree with it, and vice versa. They never have gotten along. They never will get along. And I don't think the commissioner will take a strong enough hand to do anything about it.
Well, baseball is having a fantastic year, and you know they're probably going to break all attendance records this year. Your club is doing well. The Milwaukee club has been surprising. The Cubs have been surprising. Detroit's been surprising. The Giants. Boy, I'm really pulling for our old pal Vida Blue. I know how fond you were of him.
Well, I see him on occasion now. He hasn't pitched against us as yet, thank goodness. He's quite a competitor. But he's turned just his presence on that ball club and his professionalism and attitude has really helped turn that ball club around. And they, that gives them tremendous pitching, and this is where the game lies. The Giants, on paper, other than their pitching, wouldn't figure, because you'd think their defense, infield defense, was porous, with Evans at third and Madlock at second and McCovey on bad knees at first. But they've been doing the job, and then they make their defensive switches late in the game if they have a lead. But their pitching has been outstanding, and that's what's been carrying them.
Dick, tell us, and we promise we won't get word to Wrigley Field. What do you try to do with King?
Well, I think everybody in the league knows whatever we did the first time at bat was wrong the other day. But naturally, he's strictly a fastball hitter. He's a low fastball hitter. He can hit a ball only three-quarters good or halfway good and still be strong enough to propel it out of the park. But we try to give him breaking balls. He will chase high fastballs or balls in the dirt. But primarily, strictly a low fastball hitter. And you try to get ahead of him with breaking stuff, and then he'll chase just about anything. Fryman said yesterday, and he didn't really hit that ball good. It went far enough. It just barely went in the bleachers and left center, but he didn't hit it like he can hit it, like he can hit a baseball. But Fryman tried to ride him up and away and have him chase it, and he said he just didn't get enough on it.
What do you try to do? Well, of course, you don't have to worry about Heisel anymore.
Thank goodness. He's quite a player. Heisel was the same way. You could throw him a lot of breaking balls, crowd him with the ball, and then go away with sliders and curve balls. But if you make a mistake, he was there to capitalize on it. And basically, Kingman's the same way. But Heisel's a better average hitter. Heisel can do many more things than Kingman can.
You've got a big doubleheader today. Who's going to pitch for you?
Well, we have Steve Rogers, who just renegotiated a multi-year, multi-million contract with us. He's signed through 1983 now. He goes the first game, and Scott Sanderson, a young kid from the Chicago area who was a graduate of Vanderbilt University and played at Denver. We just brought him up. He'll pitch the second game.
Well, the place will be mobbed. You can bet on that. We're delighted to have as our guest today Dick Williams, the manager of the Montreal Expos, former manager of the Oakland A's, a period he would just as soon forget about. We'll be back with our guest in just a moment.
Believe it or not, that's an M.
Dick Williams.
Same thing that are on the tie.
The manager of the Montreal Expos is our guest today, and I'm delighted to see him again because we are old friends. What is the attitude of the Montreal club? They say that the stumbling block in this particular area is the National League. What do they have against interleague play? Wouldn't you like to see the Yankees come to Montreal or the Boston Red Sox?
Did you say that our club was against it?
Somebody said that they were.
Well, I think there has to be a majority.
Are against it.
Yes, there has to be a majority vote. I don't get involved in what front office policies are what the upper echelon says about certain rules and all that. My job is to operate the ball club on the field to the best of my ability, and if I don't do it well enough, somebody else will replace me. But I personally, my own opinion, I think it would be good. I think a restructure of the leagues would be good, where we'll have regional, like the Cubs and the Sox playing against each other. Texas and Houston playing against each other. The West Coast, like the Dodgers, San Diego, the Angels, Oakland, San Francisco, and Seattle, like the old Pacific Coast League. But you could have regional divisions, and like football did, and maybe have four divisions. Whether this are even six divisions, and then you have a playoff, and then you have the final World Series, like they have the Super Bowl. But as you know, most of baseball has been behind times about 50 years, Bob. And
one of your old favorites and one of your most dependable ball players with Oakland, I don't know whether age has caught up with him or the high salary he's getting in it, but Joe Rudy is not the same ball player that you had.
No, Joe's been injured the 2 years quite often since he's been with the Angels. You couldn't find a finer person. He's a real gentle person. He's had injuries that have hampered him offensively and defensively, where he wasn't able to play for any consecutive game period. And probably nobody feels worse about it than he does, because he's an honest person and he'd like to earn his money. Here again, you look back, and I'm not knocking Joe Rudy by any means, because he played terrific baseball for the Oakland club when I was there. Collectively, you put all these fellows together, And you can look around and see what they're doing on an individual basis, you know, not with that unity we had at Oakland. And some of them are struggling. Now, tennis is going not too well at San Diego. On the other hand, Fingers is doing a fairly good job there. Bando, he's certainly holding his own over at Milwaukee. And Blue is doing the same thing there. Now, Catfish Hunter, he's had arm problems, and he really hasn't done the job that they wanted to pay him.
Well, he did some great pitching for you, didn't he?
Oh. We have a fellow here with the Cubs now, both Catfish and Vida and Kenny Holzman. Now, Kenny's going to get a chance to really assert his ability down the stretch here for the Cubs, and I think he's going to do a tremendous job because he's a money pitcher if there ever was one. These three fellas, you needed a victory. You could flip a coin and take any one of the three, and you know you were going to get your money's worth.
Dick, it's been nice of you to put yourself out to be our guest today, and it's a pleasure seeing you again. And I wish you a long, long, long career, many, many more years in a game in which you really distinguished yourself, and it's a pleasure seeing you.
The way this modern generation is going, Bob, I don't know if I'll last that long, but I'm just trying to make it through today.
Thank you. Our guest, Dick Williams. He'll be at Wrigley Field today, a big doubleheader. He's the manager of the Montreal Expos and one of the outstanding managers in baseball. Try to get out and see the games. Anyway, have a happy Sunday. And now this is Bob Elson saying goodbye until next Sunday at our usual time.